Shout out to Catherine, who told me about this important episode.
Oh, really?
So Catherine works for THV-11 down in Arkansas. So when I was talking to all these reporters about like getting the word out about getting the DNA test. By the way, the DNA for the West Memphis 3 case is at the lab.
Oh, it's being tested?
We should have results by the end of the year.
Oh, my God.
I know. But Catherine's awesome. She's made stories about it. But one of the times we were FaceTiming or Zooming, she was like, this case is really close to my heart. Like, she listens to TCO. And she like asked if we would cover it. So Catherine, this one's for you, girl.
Yes.
And thanks for all your help with everything, Catherine. You're like a champion for justice. Loving you. You're the best. Thank
you. You're getting it done down there.
I mean, Catherine, please.
Hi, Jillian Bazzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Listen, we've got nothing to hawk in the opening here. Can I make one request?
What?
Can people stop walking in the bike lane?
I can't even talk about it.
I know. But can I tell you what happened to me today?
I hate the bike lane.
I was biking in the bike lane, going the right way. There was a man walking in the bike lane, dragging this enormous metal. I don't even know what it was, but it was huge. I slammed into it. I thought I broke my arm.
Oh my God, I see the mark.
It hurts so bad. I almost went to urgent care today. I thought I broke my arm.
Is it like maybe?
It's very sensitive.
That sucks.
Oh, there's like a little bump there.
You might have to get it checked out. That sucks.
I know.
Need people, but if you have the bike lane, you got to use it. I don't want the bikes on the sidewalks now.
That isn't, those people should go to jail.
Like,
bikers on the sidewalk should be in prison.
I mean, the bike, it's a menace. It's making people not know how to behave.
It's pretty scary, but there are rules. You know what I mean?
But you got to do it.
I know, but everybody, like, pedestrians too, bikers too, we all got to work together here.
Yeah, also, hey, you know those lights that change colors?
Yeah.
That applies to you, people in the bike lane.
That is also true.
Like, that applies
to
you.
Wow, I've touched a sensitive subject.
It makes me crazy.
I know.
It makes me crazy.
I shouldn't have started with
that.
The
streets are getting smaller.
There's
and
one
smaller.
Lane. There's one lane of traffic, like, where there used to be four.
There used to be four.
Welcome to our bike lane podcast. What are we talking about today, girl?
So this is our 13th bonus episode. It's an episode of 48 hours. It's season 37, episode 8. Where is Jermaine Charlo?
Jermaine has become the Western Montana face of missing and murdered Indigenous people. And now we're to the point where it's the first anniversary, it's the second, the third.
And you've been living in limbo for 6 years.
Yeah.
I miss her.
I'm never gonna say, oh, you know what, I'm gonna stop searching for her.
She's out there somewhere, but where?
What do you need to solve this case?
I feel like I got this puzzle in front of me, but I don't have all the pieces on the table quite yet. One or two pieces could break the case.
Someone out there knows.
Someone out there knows what happened to Jermaine Charlo.
And they're just not talking.
Come forward. We know you're there. Be brave.
What a name. Jermaine Charlo.
Jermaine Austin Charlo.
Ah, what a gorgeous, gorgeous name.
Yeah.
So yeah. We're in Missoula, Montana. We meet Detective Guy Baker. He's been searching for Jermaine for 6 years.
Yeah, Jermaine is 23 years old, mother of two, went missing in 2018. And Michelle Miller is our host. She's going to try to get to the bottom of this.
So we see the last known images of Jermaine. They were captured on surveillance video on Friday, June 18th, 2018 in downtown Missoula. We see Jermaine. She's outside a bar called the Badlander. And it looks like they're standing by a dumpster. I'm not exactly sure if that's what that is, but they're standing in front of something. There's a man behind her. There's a couple other people that she's like chatting to, and her and the man that's like by her side, they sort of like disappear into the night.
It's shortly after midnight.
6 years later, with no arrest and no publicly named suspect, police released the video to 48 hours, hoping to generate leads.
Someone out there knows what happened to Jermaine Charlo. Jermaine walks out of view, so maybe somebody saw something that has never thought about contacting us.
Police are giving the video to 48 hours, hoping that this episode will help. So we all have to work together on this one, everybody.
I think that's great. 6 years with no leads is too long to wait on putting out that surveillance video.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I think that's part of the whole missing and murdered Indigenous. But I think that's like the point.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have taken that long for attention to be.
No. And I'm like looking at this video and I'm like, I get that it's kind of grainy, but like somebody knows these other people. Like we got to, and we find out eventually the police did talk to most of the people in this video, but it's like, she's right there.
I know.
Like this is the part of this, you know, these missing people's cases are the ones that like really stick in my brain the most.
Yeah.
Like we see her walking away and then she's just gone forever.
Like she was there.
And then she's gone.
And now she's not. and this asshole is walking the earth getting away with it.
I know. And it's like, this is another one of those where it's like, we kind of know what happened, but we just can't prove it.
I know exactly what happened.
Well, of course you do.
We do. We've been through this.
Yes.
We also just had another domestic violence episode that we just covered. So it's very fresh.
What's wrong? Why can't we do Poop Cruise and then one of the sad
ones? We're doing the Ruby Slippers
one. Oh, we're doing the gay one next week.
We're doing the Ruby Slippers.
We're going to talk about a lot of gay stuff.
Yeah.
Even if it's none of the documentary, I'm going to find more gay stuff to talk about.
It's Judy Garland.
I know.
It's Dorothy.
I know. No,
it's not
right.
Just Judy Garland.
I know.
It's Dorothy's iconic Ruby Slips.
Do you know what I just learned? You know that scene where she's in the house and it's black and white and it goes to color?
Yeah, that's huge. We're going to talk about that.
Well, the way they did it was like they painted everything in sepia tones, including the body double. It's not like a trick of the film. They actually painted them black and white.
It cannot. I'll save it for next time.
Okay.
But
it
cannot be understated or overstated or whatever the right word is.
Yeah.
How important going to color was. Like what it did. Like, I'll save it.
Okay.
But like that is like, it's not, I know we say iconic a million times, but like doing that in that movie, like going from black and white to color, it has changed. It has permeated your life in ways you don't even know about yet.
Really?
And I'll get into it. It's everywhere.
I feel like when I came out, I went from black and white to color.
Yes. But like that, but see, like the fact that we even say that.
Like I was kind of joking, but I love where we're going with this.
The fact that we even say that is because of The Wizard of Oz.
Really?
Like that feeling of like, we'll get into it, but
really going deep on gay shit.
Yeah. Like, my personal opinion is that going from black and white to color in Wizard of Oz has, like, changed, like, storytelling, has changed the way we feel about things, has changed the way we communicate things. I think it's, like, a really important thing that happened in culture.
Are we making a film history podcast about gay stuff?
I mean, that would be, like, amazing.
Oh, my God. We could talk about Jeffrey and then the band played on?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Travel down. Girl, Home Chef is back. The other day I said to somebody, I don't cook. And they go, yes, you do. You cook Home Chef. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. I actually do cook because of Home Chef.
Right. And users of leading meal kits have rated Home Chef number one in quality, convenience, value, taste, and recipes.
We love it so much. So whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients or the quick 30-minute recipes, which Steve loves, oven-ready options, microwave meals, or a dedicated family menu, Home Chef has it all, fam. And it's hassle-free, and it's delicious, and it's dinner.
Yeah. And they also have 30 options a week. They have a variety of dietary needs. You can plan like a couple weeks in advance.
Yes. And you can save tons of money. Think about like the alternative is like ordering out or buying more than you need at the grocery store. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries.
Yeah. And when meal planning ends up on the back burner, which let's be honest, happens all the time.
First thing to go.
Check out Home Chef's new 5-ingredient meals that simplify prep with super easy recipe steps using just 5 fresh pre-portioned ingredients.
So fam, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 50% off and free shipping for your first box, plus free dessert for life, my favorite thing ever. Go to homechef.com/TCO.
That's homechef.com/TCO for 50% off your first box and free dessert for life.
Homechef.com/TCO.
Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert. Come on now.
Leave it to GP to come in with the rules.
I don't want anyone to be surprised.
That's true. That's fair.
Jermaine's answer here, Danny Matt and Valenda Morja.
Valenda, I can't with these names. Valenda. They're so beautiful.
And they're amazing women.
But once again, like, I'm sad for them because Danny and Valenda, their whole life now is about Jermaine missing. You know what I mean?
And the fact that, like, it has to be because the missing and murdered Indigenous women and Indigenous people stories are so undertold that, like, they're here to tell Jermaine's story and share their experience and also rightfully call out the bullshit.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's June 16th, 2018. Jermaine's family's worried. No one's heard from her.
The family says Jermaine never went anywhere without her phone, so it would be unusual for her not to text or call. They knew she had been in Missoula.
So I kept calling her.
And when she didn't answer her phone, Danny had a feeling something wasn't right.
She's not posting online, which is also alarming because she's like really working on building her social media presence. So
yes,
she's not just someone who doesn't have her phone, but like she needs it for work. Like, it's weird that she's not posting.
And she's also really close with her grandmother, and her grandmother specifically hasn't heard from Jermaine, which like Danny and Valenda are like, that would never happen. They talk 10 times a day.
Yeah. They start calling the hospitals. They're really making moves.
That must be the scariest moment of your life.
I know.
When you're entering that phase of like, oh God, now we're calling the
hospitals.
And
then it's like, what do you hope for? That thing that we've talked about a million times.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want there to be any information, but like the only information you hear would be bad news.
Yes.
So it's like, what do you even root for?
And also, I'm not making a joke here. Like, unlike the Bradley family, like, this is an example of a family, like, dealing with their grief and being realistic about it in a way that serves them.
They want answers, no matter what the answer is.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
So, Monday, June 18th, it's 48 hours since Jermaine was last seen. Valenda goes to the police. She goes to Missoula PD and the Flathead Reservation Police, which is important.
Yes. And she says that the Missoula PD, like, did their due diligence. She uses the air quotes in everything. She's like, they basically, like, listened to me and then sent me on my way.
Yeah, she's like, zero, like, no urgency at all. She goes, they didn't even say, like, oh, yeah, well, like, we have a checklist, we'll go through, like,
right,
we've done everything we could do at that moment. Like, they didn't even give her that song and dance. Like, they just didn't give a shit.
It's the whole, like, adults can go missing if they want to, kind of thing. But then without looking at the fact that she's got two kids that she loves, she's super close with her family, she loves her art. Exactly.
No,
like,
she didn't.
Nobody ever does.
Like, please.
Nobody ever does.
Please. So, but the Flathead Reservation Police Chief Craig Couture, last name, I guess. Couture.
It sounds like it should be gay stuff.
It's a little bit.
Can you imagine your last name is Couture?
Again, James St. James.
I know.
I'm sure there's a Craig Couture, but his last name is really like...
If your name is Craig Couture and you haven't opened a boutique on Main Street, what are you doing?
But Craig Couture sounds like his last name is not really Couture, but that's like his brand.
Oh!
It's a great name.
I'm going to say one more time. If you are blessed with a name like Craig Couture, it is your obligation to open that cool dress shop on Main Street.
He's not doing that.
I know.
He's not.
He's doing the good work here, though. I do like this guy.
Yeah. So, because he's at the Flathead Reservation Place.
Exactly.
That's the difference, everybody.
Yes.
So it's June 20th, 4 days later. Valenda files an official report with Missoula PD.
He did his due diligence and he checked the hospitals and the homeless shelters. I was told that she was not in immediate danger.
The guy does the bare minimum. He checks the hospitals. Family already did that.
Yeah.
Check the shelters. Family already did that.
Yeah.
And Valenda says, I was told she was not in immediate danger. And I'm like, well, how do you know that, though?
Well, in fact, why don't you assume the opposite if she's been missing for 4 days? Doesn't, like, that automatically mean she's definitely in immediate danger?
Saying that is at best a guess.
Yeah.
And it's not a very good guess.
Right.
And it's just so dismissive. Like, how do you know she's not in immediate danger? It's been 4 days.
You would think that by now there would be some sort of training in place for, and I'm sure that some places do this great. I'm sure that some places are sensitive and they listen to you and they let you believe that they care. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, that shit matters. Why are we not better at this?
I think the room just shook again.
Do we need to stop and see if we're having earthquakes?
Did you feel that?
No. Are we going to come out of this booth and be the only two people remaining on Earth?
Oh, please, God.
And you want that? Because I'd be fun.
It would be fun, but we'd both be bored.
I wouldn't be bored.
You'd get bored.
No,
I would 150 million percent eventually be bored.
No, what would happen is you would be very good with your boundaries. You would let me know that I could see you once to twice a week. We would watch movies. We'd probably drink vodka. We'd maybe dance a little bit, and then I would be bored because you wouldn't want to hang out with me all the time.
That's true.
That's why I would be bored.
All right, we got weather conditions causing flight disruptions.
Uh-huh.
Some of the pools are closed. I don't know. There's nothing.
Okay.
I got no alert.
Because
I don't know.
I don't think the room shook.
What?
I don't think the room shook.
Probably didn't.
But I am kind of imagining this world where it's just you and me.
But then we have to get food and stuff.
Like medicines.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like, I have medicines I have to take, you know?
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Oh, God.
I'm hungry, too.
I know.
So the family is, as usual, forced to do everything themselves. They're organizing the searches. They're getting the word out. And Jen Murphy is here. She's an educator in Montana. She describes the, like, logistics of doing a grid search.
Every little step that you take, it's a grid search, so you can't be any farther than an arm's length apart so that you don't miss anything. So grid searching a mountain with trees that are right next to each other is almost impossible.
She goes, it's making it almost impossible to do this search.
And she says it with such sadness because, and I'm saying this in all seriousness, we got to find another way for the woods. Because, like, where are people putting the bodies? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
We got to find a better way to do a grid. It can't all be swamps and meadows. We got to find a better way to do a grid search in the woods.
I think this is just, like, one element of it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
or no?
Lord knows they search the woods, but, like, I'm saying that Jen just says this with a lot of sadness because it's like, even if she's out here, we might not be able to find her.
Yeah, it's really, really frustrating.
You know?
And so Jen meets Valenda on one of these searches. Now, Jen didn't know Jermaine or her family when she joined the search, but she's very, very close with them now. They're like all sisters now.
It was one of those things I was thinking where it was like nobody meant for Jermaine to go missing, but once she did, God was like, we got to put these two together.
Yeah.
Or these three together, because Danny and Valenda and Jen are all very close. And Jen just takes this on, like this Jermaine being missing. Also, like,
she's Indigenous herself.
I was going to say, Jen is of the community. This really matters to her. She puts her money where her mouth
she's
is.
She's amazing.
She's incredible. But I will just say that there's just a lot of sadness, of course, with like the discussing of all of this.
Yeah, and also to like talk about the logistics of how you do a search like that. Like, right. It's all really like sad information to know.
It's very technical when you're talking about a possibly dead loved one.
Right, and it's like, oh, why can't they be? Oh, right, because you don't want to miss anything. Oh, what would you miss? Oh, this and horrible thing. It's like you just spiral.
I also always think about you don't want to be the one to find them. You know what I mean?
No.
You're a volunteer doing this grid search. How awful would that be?
Right, it's like we were saying, like, what do you root for even?
Yes.
So Jermaine's been missing for 10 days. Detective Guy Baker comes back from vacation. He missed this whole thing.
Where was he, do you think?
I don't know.
In the Galapagos.
Like the next town over.
Montana's beautiful.
You know? Oh, gorge.
You know.
But he hears about the case and he's like, oh, I'll take over because the person in charge isn't doing anything. So he just volunteers. He's like, wait, I go away for 2 weeks and like the whole fucking place falls apart. So he comes back from vacation and he's on top of it.
Yes. He really cares, you know? Like, this case quickly becomes this guy's whole personality.
And remember, he's not the reservation police. He's the Missoula police.
Yes.
Which is an important distinction.
And it's good. Like, that's great that we've got somebody on the case there that really gives a shit.
And that's, like, the point. He's like, wait, what? You're not doing anything? It's been 10 days? Like, what the hell?
Well, they also ask him if it's unusual for people to go missing in Missoula. He's like, oh, no. It happens all the time.
I think we have sometimes multiple people per week, 97, 98% statewide. Reported missing people are found. So it's that 2% that are the difficult ones.
Like the vast majority of people who like were reported missing are found.
Even if being found is a bad thing. Like even, I think that's what he's saying. That like it's very rare to not have a body. As dark as that is to say, I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah, and he's saying that he's afraid that Jermaine is going to be one of the difficult 2%. Like, there's like she's just gone.
Yeah, because Guy says that he hears about people, quote, from out of state who were trying to, again, quote, buy a girl.
Like, oh my God.
So he thinks maybe this is a trafficking situation. And we meet Brittany Williams, who's the deputy attorney of Missoula County. And she says, like, look, human trafficking is a huge problem nationwide. Yes. But she says it's an even bigger problem in Montana because it has one of the largest interstate highways that goes right through Missoula.
That sent shivers down my spine.
She says people can be swept away in an instant.
And she says because of the lack of cell phone towers, you can like they can be picked up and gone and never heard from again in minutes.
You're like instantly off the grid.
And like we've heard this before that the interstate is crucial in these trafficking operations.
The Lost Women of Highway 20, we talked about that a lot, you know.
I mean, it is just terrifying to think of the person that gets swept up and knows instantly that their life is over.
Yeah. I have a very real question. Like, can we just get cell service there?
Right.
And I'm asking, these are all genuine questions. Like, what is the holdup? Can we start a fundraiser? Like, what needs to be done? Tell me what it is, and I will try to help in some way. I'm being dead serious.
I said not since the floodlights. Remember we used to talk about that all the time with the known dumping grounds?
Right.
Like, if we know, if human trafficking in this area is such a problem because of the interstate and because of the lack of cell phone, like, start a charity. Like, right. I bet you can make this happen.
I mean, I'm asking genuinely, I should have looked this up, but like, if you happen to know, like, who do I have to call? Like, who's in charge of making sure there's cell phone service on a place where Brittany just told us is like a hotbed of sex trafficking activity and human trafficking? Then why is it so easy for someone to be, quote, swept away in an instant?
Right.
And why is the lack of cell service meaning that they're instantly off the grid? And no, like, I'm asking what needs to be done. Tell me what it is. I will make the phone call myself.
Oh, my God.
Like,
She's not kidding, Sam.
I just want to know what it is. We have a problem.
Right.
We know something causing the problem.
Yes.
And then we stop. Like, and I just feel like we're so close.
I understand you can't just clear the woods of the known dumping grounds. But like, this is the thing that this feels solvable.
And I don't want to police state. I understand. I know.
But they're using the cell phone towers anyway. Let's just get a couple more.
Right. And I know that if people want to do bad things, they'll figure it out. But if we can help people in some way by like seeing if they can not lose cell service and be instantly off the grid, then I'm very curious as to what the holdup is. And if anyone happens to know, please tell me.
I feel like you're asking all the right questions.
I
think you are.
I've been gaslighting myself thinking like, But if they are the right questions, why right. why am I asking them?
Yeah, because it is interesting to hear Brittany say, like, here's a huge problem that is solvable, but nobody's doing.
Here's the thing that's causing it. Here's yeah. one of the things that are causing it that feels a little... If it's not possible,
yes.
I'd like to know why. And then I'll stop asking.
Okay, great.
I'm just curious. Travel
down the road back again. Girl, Helix is back. They're the amazing mattress that we all love and use. I told you, once a year we give up our apartment to this organization I work with, and every single time at the end of the weekend, they always tell me how much they love our mattress, like how well they slept. And I'm not saying this for the ad read. Like, Helix is that magical.
It's that girl, yeah. as they say.
It's that girl.
We love Helix. So I used to be a really bad sleeper. Like, yeah. I would toss and turn a lot, or I just, like, couldn't get comfortable. So Mike and I took the sleep quiz.
Which is essential. I don't know how everybody isn't doing this.
Yeah, and, like, Mike sleeps differently than I do and whatever, but, like, we got the Midnight Lux. It has changed my life. Fiona loves it. She literally looks at us and, like, herds us into yes. bed, like, hello.
Oh, I love
She
that.
Gets so cozy. She makes the best noises. It's, like, it's good for kids. It's good for adults. It's good for your pets. We love it.
They send it right to your door, too, so you never have to go to a mattress store and, like, talk to a human again. Don't worry. We got you covered there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
We're
no.
We're not doing that.
And people just freaking love it. Everybody loves our Helix. Sometimes it's impossible to get Daisy out of our bed, but now they make twin beds for kids, so now she's got her own.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too. Like, it's super comfy, but you also feel rested. So in the real world, like, you can get out of bed. That's the other thing, too.
This is after a lifetime of, like, just not good mattresses. You know what I mean? Like, I look back on my sleeping before my Helix. I'm like, how did I ever do that?
It's true. And I really thought, like, this is it for me for life. Like, I'm just going to have a bad sleep forever. No.
So, fam, all you got to do, go to helixsleep.com/TCO to get 25% off site-wide.
That's helixsleep.com/TCO for 25% off site-wide. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you.
Please do that.
helixsleep.com/TCO.
So Jermaine's aunts give us the Jermaine backstory.
Even from the time she was a little kid, she had, like, the best personality. She's very outgoing.
Beautiful, resilient, animal lover. Oh, gosh, the list of pets she had is...
I think she had, like, a flying squirrel or something.
And then a pig.
She had two pigs. She's very outdoorsy. She'd always loved to be by the river and fishing.
She even had a flying squirrel.
A flying squirrel. She had tons of pets.
She had two pigs and a flying squirrel. Flying squirrels are amazing. Have you ever seen them, like, on YouTube, like,
in
action?
They're very, very cool. Jermaine was fucking awesome.
People forget how, like, they're like, oh, I want to be a bird so I can fly. The flying squirrel is an under-wished-to-be animal by little kids, I think.
Flying squirrels are very cool.
I couldn't agree more.
So Valenda was 10 years old when her niece Jermaine was born. And she's like, we were close, but we weren't close at first.
No.
Because Valenda was like, I was 10. I was the youngest. She was not psyched to have this, like, beautiful little baby around getting all the attention.
Yeah.
And she goes, and then she was like, I was the baby. She was stealing my thunder, was not a fan.
Literally,
and then
I didn't like her at all.
And then eventually someone was like, hey, can you hold the baby for a second? And then she held Jermaine and she was like, oh, I love her.
I know.
I love her so much. And then, like, that was it. And she goes, from then on, she was like my little sister, and they were super, super tight.
Because they're like 10 years apart, and so Valenda really was like her big sister.
Yeah. And Jermaine was also, like, really creative. We were told she was an amazing artist. Her dream was to go to the Institute of American Indian Arts in New Mexico.
She would crochet grocery bags to save the environment.
She used nail polish to make art. But she was, like, doing it for sustainability.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, so she's really cool, and she's really creative, and she loves animals, and she has cool ideas, and she gives a shit.
Right.
And she's, like, using her creativity to continue to give a shit.
Yeah.
And help the world.
I know. I know. She grew up in the Flathead Reservation. They tell us it's at the confluence of the Flathead and Jackal Rivers, and we see it. It is so fucking beautiful. And then they tell us it's, like, 1.1 million acres of land.
I know.
Of, like, forests, streams, and mountains.
I know.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And she had, like, super deep roots on the reservation.
She's a member of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes, and a descendant of Chief Charlot, known for his peaceful resistance during the 1870s, when the tribe was forced to move from their ancestral land in Montana's Bitterroot Valley to the Flathead Reservation.
This was a really, really important figure in the community, and this is, like, her bloodline.
Her direct,
like,
descendant.
Like,
yeah, Jermaine was awesome.
Yeah, awesome. So she was also a mother. She had two little boys, Jacob and Thomas, and she was co-parenting with their father, who's a fucking loser and most likely a murderer.
Yes.
It was a, quote, strained relationship, and I'm like, here we go. Here we go.
But,
you know, she's just, like, she just ran off, and she's fine. She's allowed to go missing. The strained relationship is never late either.
And that's my thing about that. It's like, okay, a adults are legally allowed to go missing, but can we just take a look at the circumstances of their life before we decide that?
Right.
And then give a shit?
And like missing out of the clear blue sky?
Right.
Like, give me a break. So she was working at the Big River Cantina on the Flathead Reservation. She was hoping to find work as a seasonal firefighter. I'm like, the cool facts about Jermaine just keep coming.
I was like imagining her with one of those big fire hoses.
Saving
She's in the middle
lives.
Of the woods. I know.
I love her.
We need her.
So Brittany, the deputy attorney, explains,
in Montana, indigenous persons make up only about 6% of the population, but 24% of the state's active missing persons cases.
They make up 24% of the missing person cases.
It's just so glaring.
It's so obvious.
And what took us so long to focus on this? I feel like we've just started focusing on the missing and murdered indigenous women, like, 6 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, insufferable GP fact. Like, it's colonization. That's all it is. It's like the white, it's like changing history and villainizing these people that we
yes.
stole the land from. Like, it all, I'm sorry to say it. I know, like, it's insufferable, but like, that's what it comes from.
Yeah.
It is completely rooted in colonization, the residential schools. Like, it all goes back to how these indigenous people were treated by white people.
And I think we'll see even a bit in this episode that it took them deciding they had to tell their own stories for us to start to really learn about
this. Right. Exactly.
You know?
Like, being like backed into a corner and being like, okay, fine. Like,
we can't
we'll
have more
it.
Women going missing from our fucking reservation.
Yeah. Like, women and people, it's mostly women, I know that, but it's like just like people not giving a shit about the indigenous people. Like, how much more can we do to these people?
Right. And we're told, obviously, this is an epidemic, right?
Right.
So we learn that law enforcement has ruled out human trafficking in Jermaine's case. And Brittany, the DA, says, quote, we have enough evidence that I believe something else happened to her.
What?
Like, this is an episode full of, like, but it's an active investigation, so we can't tell you anything else.
Everyone is like, however.
Yes.
And they're, like, looking at us very plainly, almost looking directly into the camera, being like, it was the ex, but we can't say
but
that.
She's blinking it in Morse
code. There's like a lot of that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's go back to the video of Jermaine outside the bar the last time she was seen. She's wearing the same outfit as she's wearing in a social media post from that day.
Yes.
And in the video that we see from like the CCTV footage or whatever, Jermaine is talking to her ex, this asshole named Michael DeFrance.
Yes.
He's the father of her two kids. And I'm like, here we go.
Yeah.
He spoke to the cops without a lawyer. He says he left with Jermaine. They got into his truck. They left the downtown area. He dropped her off at the Orange Street food farm. And that was it.
Because there's a friend nearby. According to this piece of shit, Jermaine has a friend named Cassidy who lives nearby. She's going to go spend the night there. And this drop-off happened at about 1 a.m.
So Jermaine says to him, well, I'm going to crash with Cassidy, but instead of dropping me off at my friend's house, just drop me off at the food farm. And you're like, okay.
Right.
So the cops, this is all going to make sense in 2.5 seconds.
Police didn't find a Cassidy, but they learned Jermaine had been visiting Missoula regularly because she was dating a man named Jacob who lived in that neighborhood.
Jacob is a man that Jermaine was dating. He's out of town in another state, but they were like texting that night. He was infatuated with Jermaine. Like, of course, like, why wouldn't you be?
Yes.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
So messages show that Jermaine was planning to crash at his place while he's out of town. And I'm like, oh, so she lied to the ex because he'd go crazy on her.
Exactly.
Made up a girlfriend. That I totally get. That I believe that Jermaine would do that.
It's also like, we're going to learn later that there was so much tension and strife between Jermaine and her ex that I can't figure out why she got in the car with him in the first place. What they were doing at that bar together.
Maybe about their kids. Maybe some, you know, like you're tied. When you have kids, you're like tied to these people.
And when it's okay, probably.
Yeah.
You know.
But she felt she had to lie to him, which is a major, major red flag. She had to like make up a friend.
Yes. And so Jacob, the new boyfriend, tells the police that he tried to call her just before 1 a.m. And he thought it was weird that the call rang and rang and then somebody silenced it. It's not like it rang and rang and rang and it went to voicemail. It rang a few enough times and then went to voicemail that he knew that somebody sent it to voicemail, which would have been weird for Jermaine to have done because that's her man.
Right.
You know?
Or like maybe she's with someone where she can't answer, like whatever the reasoning, it's suspicious. And the phone carrier confirms this. So like it was silenced. Also, the day before Jermaine disappeared, Jacob, the new boyfriend, saw the piece of shit ex, quote, yelling at Jermaine, demanding that Jermaine tell him about who she was dating, which is absolutely none of his business.
And then he wanted to get back together with her.
Right. And I guess you could argue that, like, as the father of the kids,
sure,
like, he deserves to know who's around his children. Like, fine. But that's not, I don't think that's what this was.
No, and it was like this Jacob relationship was so new that, you know what I mean? Like, who knows if he even met the kids yet?
Right.
You know?
So, and Jacob was helpful. He was out of town at the time. He was never considered a suspect. The cops are like, he did not do this. It was the ex, but we can't say it was the ex because this is an active investigation. But also, we need your help, which is why we're on 48 Hours, but it was the ex.
Yeah, and also on our podcast, if you know he did it, can you just fucking call the cops and give them the evidence?
Like,
somebody knows.
And also, the ex is not considered a suspect at this time.
It's funny because DA Brittany will be like, well, he's not a suspect, but we can't say that he is a suspect.
It was the ex.
Yeah, it was the ex.
It was the ex. He's a bad guy. So Jermaine's phone, the investigators need to find it ASAP. And also, I will say right now, to this day, they've never found her phone.
Yes.
But they want her phone. They can't find her phone. There is a reason.
Great news, though.
What?
Michael knows exactly where it is.
Well, weird. So based on the cell phone tower information,
we got cell phone data that indicated it was active on the night she disappeared, and it was active multiple times, primarily between the hours of 2 a.m. and up until just about 10 a.m. on the 16th of June.
Between the hours of 2 a.m. up until 10 a.m., also known as the fucking middle of the night.
Yeah, I wrote, well, this seems big.
And they kind of have a location. It's north of Missoula. It's in the area of Evero Hill.
And just as a quick reminder, Michael, the ex, the father of the two kids, says that he dropped Jermaine off at that food place at 1 a.m.
Right.
And her phone is active from 2 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Right. So, because we saw her on camera at midnight.
Yes.
So Evero Hill is on the Flathead Reservation. It's a very rugged area, like lots of trees and wildlife. Translation, hard to search.
Yes.
And her ex knows this area very well because he lives there.
Right. So weirdly, her phone is active in that area after he says he dropped her off in downtown Missoula.
Right. So the ex, they have a not great relationship. He was the last person to see her. He was yelling at her on the video, and he lives where her cell phone was last active.
Right. And like, in his story, these people are so dumb. In his story, he dropped her off but kept her phone. You know what I mean?
Right, or she left it there and then he didn't drop it. Or like, he's full of shit.
Yeah, and so, like, the cops say that they searched this area of Evero Hill, but she has not been found. But of course, if she is there, I mean, it's thousands of miles of wilderness.
Right.
Travel down the road back again. Girl, Function is back. I've been using Function for weeks and weeks now. And look, I chose Function because it's the only health platform that gives me data most people never get and the insights to start doing something about it. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, inside Function, you get access to test over 100 plus biomarkers from hormones to toxins to markers of heart health, inflammation, and stress.
Yeah, so I'm getting older. I'm 47 years old. I'm thinking about aging. And there's lots of these biomarkers that have to do with aging that you can also be monitoring on the Function dashboard. And for an additional fee, fam, you can also access MRI and chest CT scans, all tracked in one secure place over time.
Yeah, it's a near 360-degree view to better see what's happening in your body.
Yeah, that's why top health leaders like Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Andrew Huberman, and Dr. Jeremy London are all behind Function Health. I gotta tell you, this is not your blood work that you're used to. Like, this is everything you need to see and then action steps you can take. I love looking at it.
Yeah, and look, aging well isn't just about looking younger.
No!
You know, it's about keeping the systems that matter most in peak condition.
Yes. For example, hormones influence how aging unfolds. So men tend to lose muscle mass gradually as testosterone declines. Monitoring my testosterone levels was one of the reasons I wanted to get on Function.
Yeah, and women may experience a sharp drop in estrogen during menopause, accelerating bone loss and raising cardiovascular risk. We can't have any of that.
No, and you can like literally look at it and then follow the action steps. It's like what to do to fix it.
Yeah.
So fam, learn more and join using our link.
Function is a near 360-degree view to see what's happening in your body, and our first 1,000 listeners get a $100 credit toward their membership.
Visit functionhealth.com/TCO or use gift code TCO100 at sign up to own your health.
That's right.
It feels good to do it, I gotta tell you.
Gotta own it.
Yep.
So Jermaine's family puts up a billboard and Jen Murphy took the idea and ran with it. Now, if you remember, Jen is the indigenous woman who didn't know Jermaine and her family, but joined the search and then became like family to Jermaine's aunts.
I currently am doing a project with billboards throughout Montana and throughout the United States. I try to have billboards as close to our reservations as possible, trying to make sure that speaking to the perpetrators too, like, we see you.
I also want to speak right to the perpetrators, too. We see you. It was the ex.
It was totally the ex. And, like, I was trying to put myself in the mindset of the killers who drive by these billboards. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what must that be like for them? But also,
they kind of, probably some of them kind of love it.
And they know they're getting away with it because they're taking advantage of the fact that nobody cares.
I mean, also, this ex, he's white.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So that should also be part of it. I'm sorry, like, I know everyone's sick of me talking about it, but, like, he's a white guy and she's a missing and murdered Indigenous woman. This is what we got to talk about today.
And part of the reason he maybe did this, allegedly, is because he knew he would get away with it because nobody goes looking for these people.
And just like a quick, he comes from money, this guy.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. So I think that's part of it. He's like rich and white and can absolutely get away with things.
Yeah.
And I think that is an important part of it.
Of course.
You know, like his family's pretty connected in the community. So I've read.
Yeah.
And just like little things here and there. But like, oh, like that sort of adds to why we're talking about this.
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Not say we've also done stories where other Indigenous men have killed Indigenous women.
Yes.
I'm just saying, I think it's worth mentioning that this guy's white and rich.
Before you said that, I was going to say, I think it's a very important point to point out that this man is white. And one of the reasons he knows he can get away with this is because she's Indigenous.
And like well-connected. He's white and well-connected. Like, come on.
Yes.
We got to talk about it today.
I hope he's listening.
Oh, fuck him. And I'm not saying allegedly. I'll say it.
Okay, great.
What is that, slander, libel? I don't give a shit. What is he going to do, sue me?
Maybe.
Maybe, well, maybe he won't.
Maybe he won't.
I'll take that risk.
You know what? I want you guys to do a steel cage match. Whoever wins, wins.
I don't think I could do that.
You know what would happen? The rage would come out.
I guess.
You were in the ring with this killer, you would go blind and then all of a sudden he'd be dead.
I have a couple moves because I took some like martial arts courses I took Muay Thai and not like seriously. I never like fought anyone, but I like took the class. It was all dudes. It sucked because I felt very uncomfortable there.
Why did you take it?
I wanted it as like to do like a little bit of a workout, but I also wanted to arm myself in some way. So I thought like,
your self-defense is how can I beat these fuckers' asses?
I was just like, I want to be able to protect myself. And I also want to work out. So I figured like, it's got to do both kind
of. Two birds, one stone.
And I like it. Like I like a boxing workout. I like that kind of thing.
You're so hot.
So I got some moves.
I can see you like with your hair, like in the ponytail doing with the fucking
gloves.
But my point is just, if you got in the ring with this guy, you would beat him to death and you wouldn't even remember.
I got
it.
A couple moves.
I know.
I got a couple moves.
It's the blacking out for me.
And with him, I'm going to fight dirty.
Yeah. Like, because you wouldn't remember it, but I'd get to watch it and it would be wild.
Great.
Yeah.
Film it or tell me about it after.
Absolutely.
Whatever.
We're the only two people left on the planet. What else are we going to talk about?
Did I get him?
You got him.
Okay, good.
Nailed it.
So, like, we learn more about missing and murdered Indigenous women.
In 2019, the Justice Department created a task force to investigate cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people around the country. Social media has helped to ignite the movement.
But this is actually very cool. So we have footage from the 2024 Emmy Awards. So DeFaro Wunatai is from Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
It's an excellent show. It's on FX. You should definitely watch it. But he's wearing like that famous red palm print on his face that's sort of become like the visual of the movement on the red carpet at the Emmys.
And can we talk about the red palm print?
I would love to.
So that woman, Jen Murphy, the one that became like a sister to Valinda and Danny, the aunt, she came up with this idea.
Yeah.
And it is such a striking image. And she says the idea of it. Google the fam if you don't know what we're talking about.
But you've seen it. You'll be like, oh, I know what that is.
It's like an Indigenous person standing there with a red palm print over their mouth, like they're being silent.
Yeah.
And it is such a perfect image. It's like, it reminded me a little bit of like the No Hate campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Like,
it
was
tape.
Super bright white light, and then there was the duct tape over their mouth, and it just said like N-O-H-8, like No Hate. And it was, you know, these visuals are so important, but these photos are so striking. I don't know if you saw it, but the district attorney, Brittany, has one in her office.
Yeah.
And they're just really beautiful to look at, but the symbolism of the handprint over the mouth, like they're being silenced, it's just so perfect. It's a story that is so perfectly told.
Right. And for this actor, DeFaro, to do it on the Emmy red carpet.
Yeah.
It's a really important statement on like a very, very big platform.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend Reservation Dogs enough. It's a really, 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 really good show.
Yeah.
So Jen Murphy is the photographer, right? And also like the friends. Now she's become friends with Jermaine's family.
Yeah.
Because she joined the search. So she is using the fact that she's a photographer to help this cause as well. So she does a photo shoot with Vina Little Owl.
Yes.
And it's the same alley where Jermaine was last seen. Like that's what's on the video at like midnight where she leaves with her ex. So it's really moving to see. It's also super sad that they have to do this at all.
Yes.
But they're doing it. And she says, like,
the red handprint really symbolizes our people being silenced. How we have always been looked at differently and that our people have not been heard in the same way that other people are. That's a harsh reality, and it has been since the beginning of time, since colonization.
We need to find ways to get people to give a shit. So when you have these, this like striking imagery and like to have this actor on a very successful show in a tux and this thing, like doing red carpet interviews.
And everyone's going to ask him about it.
Is huge.
Yeah.
It was a really big deal.
One of the things that stood out to me was when they were doing that photo shoot in the alley where Jermaine was last seen, the photo shoot starts with a ceremony.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It looks like they brought like a carpet or something with them and they're down and they're praying.
Yeah.
They have the ceremony that goes along. It's not just a cold photo shoot. It's like
there's
a whole ceremony involved in it. It's all about remembering the missing person.
Very. And honoring and honoring the cause. And like it's very, very intentional.
Yeah. To me, that also feels like what we were talking about in that episode of Murder Has Two Faces, where it's like taking care of the person who you're asking to take this picture.
Sure.
It's like the person who's taking the picture is often connected to the missing person.
Right.
And doing this ceremony that is like really speaking to the universe about this person before you're being asked to go then do this photo shoot, essentially, to bring publicity is a really cool way to like take care of the loved ones of the person.
Right, about something so dark and awful.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have to do this.
Right.
So it's like this experience that they're all having for their own community because they're all Indigenous women. So Detective Guy Baker, he's investigating the case. He took the case over. So he wasn't there at the very beginning. So he got the case 10 days after Jermaine disappeared.
He was in the Galapagos.
And wherever he was.
Right.
And he admits...
You know, just look at our national media. Gabby Petito goes missing, and look at the national exposure she got for a week or two for a Caucasian female, and how many missing Native American females went missing in that same time period and got nothing.
Oh, there is absolutely a disparity in care and attention because he's white.
Yes.
And so he's saying like, well, yeah, white women, like he's here to confirm like, oh, well, I can tell you the numbers. Like they're absolutely right.
Yeah.
This sucks.
Yes.
So we go through the video footage, the last footage of Jermaine. And it's like a small group of people outside this bar. It's Jermaine. It's her ex and some other witnesses. And Jermaine is talking to a guy that we don't know about. It's not Jacob.
Right.
It's someone just like a person. Again, it could be anyone like this. This ex is going to fly off the handle no matter what.
Because she's standing there with the ex talking to this other guy, and it's Valinda and Danny, her aunts, who are being shown this surveillance video for the first time, which I think is kind of important because our host is asking them for their impressions. Like, we might actually get something from this.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, like, the ex is standing behind Jermaine, like, trying to be intimidating to this other person, and, like, Jermaine introduces the two men, or so, this is what it looks like. It looks like she's introducing them, and the ex is, like, still trying to be a tough guy, like, rolling up his sleeves, arms crossed, not leaving them alone. Like,
right.
Go away.
Go away.
So I'm like, well, who are all these other people on camera? Like, they're witnesses. So who are they? Where are they?
Yeah.
What do they know? What exactly was this conversation? Was the ex making threats or was he just trying to be a tough guy? Like, what's going on?
And this is where we learned.
Detective Baker says he spoke with several of the people seen on the video. But because this investigation is still active, he wouldn't say much about what he learned.
It's an open investigation, and he can't tell us
anything. Just when I was like, oh, you did? What'd they say? No.
No, nothing.
We can't know what information they gave.
Yeah. Travel down the road back again. Girl, Everyday Dose is back. You've heard of Friends with Benefits. This is like coffee with benefits. And my whole idea with why I drink it now is because I drink coffee every day. I love it. And if I can get more out of it, like legit things I need, why wouldn't I do that?
Yeah. So Everyday Dose has this classic coffee taste that everyone loves, right?
It's really delicious.
But it doesn't have the nasty side effects, like no crash, no jitters. You're not feeling bloated after.
Yes. No, this coffee plus features 100% Arabica coffee enhanced with functional ingredients for smooth energy, calm focus, gut health, and skin support. So like she said, no crash, no jitters. It's just like coffee plus extra good stuff to get you going.
There's also collagen involved.
Yes.
And so collagen is less about quantity and more about consistency. So Everyday Dose makes it easy to support like your skin, hair, nails, joints.
Yeah,
just have it in your coffee every day.
This is also not a one roast fits all situation. They've got the mild roast, the medium roast. It's really like if you like it a little bit darker, you go with the medium. If you like it a bit lighter, you go with the mild.
They have it all.
They got it all. Fam, I love this stuff. love so much. And exciting news, you can now find Everyday Dose in Target stores across the country.
Celebrate with a buy one, get one deal. Just buy any two Everyday Dose products at a Target store near you and they'll pay you back for one.
Yeah, so visit everydaydose.com/obsessed for more details.
There you go. And it's fancy because you said details. But it's not too fancy. You're just going to have it every day.
It's it's so good. Just, it's normal. Be cool.
So here's the situation with Jermaine and this ex, this Michael DeFrance guy. He's white. They met when she was 14 and he was 16. His family moved across the street. And again, we just did this in the murder of Emily Longley.
Yeah.
How it's like, it got really, really serious, really, really fast. And they're both so young.
Yeah. And there were a lot of red flags. Like Aunt Felinda found like explicit pictures.
Like sexually explicit photos of Jermaine.
She's 14 years old and she takes it to them and says like, you guys should not be doing this. And explicitly says the piece of shit boyfriend like didn't even respond to that.
Like they found these photos of Jermaine on Jermaine. Like, she's sending nudes to this guy?
It's illegal. I mean, like, it is absolutely illegal for them to be doing this.
Right. And it's also incredibly out of character for Jermaine. So
yes.
Her aunts are like, this guy's a bad influence. Like, she didn't do this before.
Right.
He entered the picture and now she's doing this. Like, this is not cool.
No.
And Jermaine's family did not approve of this relationship, which is never good.
Yeah.
For about a million reasons. But, like, how often do you hear about a family not approving and the teenagers being like, oh, okay, cool.
You're right.
Like, it's just,
you know what? On second thought.
Right. But then, again, this train's never late, the ex starts getting violent and he starts hitting Jermaine.
Yeah. And so it was April 2013. It's 2 weeks before Jermaine's 18th birthday. And Valinda is the one that Jermaine calls. And she's like, you need to get down here. He hit me and it's bad.
According to court documents, Michael DeFrance, who was 19, admitted he assaulted Jermaine. The defendant made the following admissions: that he hit her three times, that he used his fist. DeFrance pled guilty to partner family member assault.
He pleads guilty to partner slash family member assault, said he wouldn't serve jail time, but he would be prohibited from owning a firearm.
And so that's important. So he was 19, she was 17.
Yeah.
So, of course, this is all very, very hard for her family to hear and see in writing. Like, it makes it such, so official.
And it's also, I was just thinking about the family, like, when they can't make her leave, but, like, the day that Daisy tells me that her boyfriend beat her, and then she goes back to him, all I'm saying is that it must have been absolutely devastating for the family, because we then learn that, like, she's living with him, and they're living in a camper on his family's property, and they know how violent this relationship is.
Right. And she's, like, she's alone. It's so lonely.
Yes.
She's, like, alone.
Right, because a few months after this incident, Michael leaves town. He's gotten a job as a seasonal firefighter. And she's like alone.
It's not cool when he does it. It was cool when Jermaine did it. It's not cool when
but
the murderer
does it. Seasonal
firefighters,
we need you.
No, we need you. But if you're a murderer, then go fuck yourself.
Then go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Steel cage match with Joanne.
Oh my, can you imagine? I could never. Like, I wouldn't.
I know you think that. But when we get those boxing gloves on you and a murderer in the ring that hasn't been brought to justice, I think the badass is going to come out.
But, like, don't you think his rage would come out on me, too?
Yeah, but that would just bring out the rage in you more.
You
like,
think so?
Oh, yeah.
I would need, like, big, burly dudes who I trust.
Yeah.
I need, like, Zach and Bob.
Oh, we've all got guns.
Be able to, like, jump in and, like, tackle this guy.
Because
he would hate me sight.
Because he would hate you for being a woman, but that would bring out, there would just be no contest.
Feels like I'm in a dangerous situation.
You're absolutely in a dangerous situation, but you're in a no-lose situation. You know what I mean? In a situation where it starts to go badly, we'll have Bob
Can we just bring in a bear and have the bear take him out?
Yeah.
And, like, I will literally choose the bear and have the bear eat this guy if I need backup.
And we get to watch?
Yeah.
All right.
I think that would be nice for everybody, especially
like
the bear.
The bear.
And then the bear, like,
he's kind of skinny.
The bear, like, doesn't get tranquilized. The bear doesn't get killed. The bear just gets to be a bear.
The bear's the king of the village.
Like, and then they just get to eat this guy.
The bear gets to be the grand marshal at next year's Pride March.
Unless evil people taste bad to bears, then I don't want him to have, like, a disgusting snack or whatever.
I hadn't considered that.
I want him or her to be satiated.
Okay,
when they eat this bear.
Right, we'll take this one step at a time.
Does anyone know if murderers taste bad to bears? I'd like to know that. It's another question I have. Because if a murderer still tastes just as delicious as anything else, then we should really be enlisting the bears to do a little bit more work.
I I couldn't. Jillian's Law. Like, I think this is going to be a great subplot for season two on Jillian's Law.
If it's like it makes their stomach hurt, or if they're like, oh, like I can't stomach the evil, then I don't want to.
I think on
hurt
season
them.
On season two, episode one of Jillian's Law, they're rolling in just fans full of bears, and the townspeople are a little confused at first.
And it's not like I'm going to starve the bears so that they're hungry.
No.
Think that's part of the fun torture for the evil people, because then they're like, when the bear feels like it, it'll eat you, and you don't know when it's coming. And so that's part of the psychological warfare
for the
murderer.
I think we solved it.
Okay, great.
I think we got
this
justice.
This ex did it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he's out doing it, being a seasonal firefighter, and Jermaine was alone. She was lonely. So she starts vlogging, and, like, one of the quotes we hear...
You said that all with, like, such calm and determination. This is
serious.
How I know. We might not even need the bears.
I want the bears.
Your plan is better than mine.
Because I feel like if I gave them all this delicious food, they let me pet them.
Maybe.
Like, one ear
I know.
Scratch.
We do have to play by the rules. We have to remember that bears are always bears.
Like, that's what's going to kill me.
I know.
Not the rageful man.
Let's just go back to that guy being torn limb from limb.
Okay, great.
Yeah. We'll just
like whenever the bears feel like it. And whenever. Then you don't know when it's coming. And then you're just like psychological torture.
Yeah.
So she says this thing when she's vlogging. She goes, I don't do much. I'm just supposed to be a housewife. And I'm like, Jermaine, you're so awesome.
I know.
Do you mean this piece of shit left you and he's making you feel bad about yourself and he's not even here. Like, I hate him.
I hate him too.
So Aunt Valinda tells us, like, they were together. They were raising two boys, which is why she's not leaving. She has kids with this asshole.
Right.
Like, I get it. But the violence continued. And, like, she just keeps calling her aunts for help. And they're like, this was horrible for us.
Yeah. And, you know, they say, but she stayed, which is unfortunately what happens to a lot of victims of domestic violence.
Right.
Like,
when kids are involved.
Staying for the kids, hoping it's going to fucking get better. Not necessarily even knowing what the answer is. Maybe she honestly loves the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So 2017, they break up for good. And things do not get better for Jermaine. They get worse.
Yes.
In early 2018, just months before her disappearance, Jermaine and Michael had a heated custody battle over the boys. According to her family, Jermaine had limited resources. Michael DeFrance, it seemed, had more.
Because he had all the money for a lawyer and Jermaine didn't. His family's rich and connected.
Yeah, this really surprised me because I come from a world of divorce. And I come from a world of, like, where the mother always gets the kids unless the mother's a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think we've been told in documentaries and also, like, from listeners, that's usually the default, like...
Yes, and I'm not trying to imply that Jermaine is a piece of shit. I'm saying it's surprising because she clearly is not.
That it's, like, the mother until proven otherwise.
Yes.
Usually is what we've been told is sort of the point of view of the court, I think. I could be wrong.
The only thing that I can think of is that we knew that they were living in a trailer on his property, so maybe she didn't have stable housing or something. I don't know.
I think they had the money for a really, like, vicious lawyer.
I guess so. She gets visitation rights. Like, this is all seems crazy to me.
So the cops have been looking into the ex, and there were two search warrants on his property. But again, it's an open and active case, so they can't really share anything. Now, I have, like, just a quick GP note that I just found, like, really, really quickly. It's just for, like, I needed to figure out the timeline because I was getting really confused here. So October 2018, Jermaine is missing for 3 months. This is when the police searched the ex's property for the second time, because we just learned there were two search warrants.
Yes.
So the cops found guns, which he's not allowed to have because of that assault conviction in 2013, where he, like, wrote that he assaulted her, like, was very honest about it. So he didn't get any jail time, but, like, he couldn't have his precious guns. Like, so now when they, in 2018, the second search found guns, and they're like, well, you're not supposed to do that because they call him, like, he's a prohibited person. That's what they call it. So he's found guilty of possession of a firearm when he's a prohibited person and 3 counts of a false statement during a firearms transaction. So he's, like, lying to get the guns.
Oh, my God.
Because he knew he wasn't supposed to have them.
Yes.
But then in 2024, those firearms charges were overturned because basically the decision that came down from the court, they were basically like, well, that 2013 thing doesn't count as domestic violence. They said that it, like, wasn't domestic violence-y enough for him to be considered a prohibited person.
So then, like, he should have been allowed to have guns the whole time because he didn't hit her hard enough.
Right. So in 2023, the court were like, no, he should not be able to have these guns. Like, we're upholding that charge.
Yeah.
Then in 2024, it was overturned. Like, this is what the court's wasting their fucking time on.
And so, like, retroactively saying, no, it's fine.
He's fine. And the charges were overturned because they deemed it, like, not domestic violency enough.
Oh, my God.
For their liking. This is what we're wasting the court's time with.
Yeah.
Going back and forth about this.
Well, and then meanwhile, we learn that these search warrants that they got on his property included cadaver dogs. So, like, they think they're looking for a body on his property. Meanwhile, he's raising their children.
Raising their children.
That is what is, like, also so terrible. He killed her, very likely.
He killed her.
And is raising their kids.
Yeah. And, like, all these searches are happening and nothing, they're getting zero evidence. And it's like Jermaine has vanished into thin air. Like, they can't make sense of this.
Right.
Like, how is there nothing? It's so obviously, like, who else could it be?
Right.
And she didn't fucking disappear herself. So it's him.
No, but, like, we know that, like, he says he dropped her off at this place in downtown Missoula. And then for the rest of the night, her cell phone is pinging in his fucking backyard.
Right.
We know where she's in. Like, the problem is, he was able to hide her in an area in that vast million-acre right. wilderness that only he's going to be able to lead us to.
Right. And probably had help.
Yes.
From his rich, connected parents.
Yes.
So let's talk about Jermaine's phone. It last pinged in Evero Hill and was active between 2 a.m. and 10 a.m. after Jermaine was seen on the security camera. Right. So this is where the ex was living. And in his first statement to police, he says he dropped Jermaine off in Missoula at 1 a.m. Jermaine had her phone with her.
Yes.
And the cops were like, well, that's interesting. So why was her phone active in Evero Hill? And this is when he changes his story. He's like, oh, no, wait, sorry.
My
Did
bad.
I say she had it? No.
No.
I had her phone.
Right.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I had her phone.
In a subsequent interview, he provided a statement that she left her cell phone and he attempted to go through her cell phone and he was unable to get into her cell phone.
What he said he did next surprised Detective Guy Baker. DeFrance admitted that 2 days after he last saw Jermaine, he threw her phone away.
2 days later, he throws her phone away in Idaho. At this point, he's a long-haul trucker, and he threw her phone away in Idaho at mile marker 94 on Highway 12.
So,
wait a second. But there's no reason. He gives no reason for why he did this.
So the mother of your children, also just like a person, is missing for 2 days, and you go drive to Idaho to throw her phone away?
Right.
Why?
I mean, once again, it makes no sense, but I guess in his mind, he's thinking no body, no crime, no charges.
Right.
It doesn't matter what I say.
And guess what? The area was searched. They didn't find the phone or anything else.
I mean, he's not telling the truth about where the phone is.
But even, like, it's all very suspicious anyway.
Yeah.
Like, he's lying about the phone, like, whether he had it or she had it. Then he says he threw it away. He's very specific about how and when and where, but nothing's in the area. Like, did he throw it away? Why would he throw it away? Why would he go to Idaho? Like, also, is he concerned that Jermaine's missing?
Well, but that's the other thing. Like, he's not even pretending to be sad that she's gone.
Yeah, I haven't heard a word about that.
Right.
He threw away her phone is the story?
Yes.
I mean, he did somehow because we haven't found the phone.
Right.
So the phone is gone somehow.
Right.
But now he's lying about it. So he's admitting he got rid of the phone.
And it's one of those things where, like, the cops have to pretend that maybe he's telling the truth, even though everyone's like, this is a ridiculous, like, this makes no sense.
And as we're, like, screaming about this, the lawyers are like, look, this is a very, very hard case. And the lawyers have one shot. They don't know where Jermaine is. There is not a lot of evidence. This is a very hard case to prosecute. And even so, that's why it's been over 6 years and charges haven't been filed yet, because they're like, we do this one time.
Yes.
And if we do this prematurely, it's over.
Yeah. But then she just says that thing where she's like, I'm doing everything we can to put together a successful prosecution. Should we meet that crossroad? It is my belief that we are close to moving forward with this case. She's like, if we can get there. It's one of those things where, like, I felt like at this part they were talking directly to the killer.
Yes.
Like, be scared because we're almost there.
But in the same breath, I think they're also talking to us because they're like, you know what would be really helpful? If someone who knows something came forward. And Guy Baker's personal phone number is on the billboard. His phone number is 406-396-3217.
Yeah.
Once again, that number is 406-396-3217. That's his personal phone number.
Yeah.
And they're using this, for lack of a better term, they're using this episode like as a commercial.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
So the family also chose the location of the billboard for a very specific reason.
Right.
It's near where Jermaine's sons live. Also, who I think is the killer.
This made me so sad because it's Aunt Danny who says,
I know that Michael would probably have to take that route to come to Missoula. And I thought, well,
The boys might not be able to see her in person, but that picture will be there, and Jacob and Thomas could see their mother every time they drove by there.
And the kids will see their mother because she can't be with them now. That made me realize that the kids do not see her family, right?
Nope.
Like, that the kids have no relationship with Danny and Valinda, and that broke my heart. If you didn't kill her, why would you be keeping the kids away from the family? That exactly. doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. He did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a tactic, putting the photos of the victims here. We will dive into this in Mr. and Mrs. Murder.
Yes.
But it's something that people do to, like, communicate with the killer that, like, we're not giving up.
Right.
We know you did this. It's for the kids, too.
Yeah.
But it's also a reminder every single day.
Yes.
That, like, this isn't going away.
We see you.
Like, I don't care that you're rich and white. Like, we got this. Like,
yeah.
We're on 48 hours now.
Right, exactly.
Like, we're going to do this. But it says, like, say her name, Jermaine Austin Charlow, 6 years in June and still no answers. The website on the billboard is mmiwproject.org. Go donate. I did.
Yeah.
It's not just for Jermaine's case. It's for so many other cases. And then it says, Jermaine, we will never stop until you are found. These are multiple billboards. Our voices will not be silenced. We are still here. How many must go missing until you start to listen?
Yeah.
These are four different billboards, at least, not to mention the famous one.
Yes.
That we saw. That's like the thumbnail to this episode at all.
And it's like, you know, we've got Valinda sobbing, just saying that she's going to search forever. We just did this. We're doing this all the time. It's like people are just going to, this is their whole life now.
And it ends. So go to that website, mmiwproject.org, donate if you can, or just like share it, do whatever you can. But Aunt Valinda tells us this like really unbelievably moving thing. She says, so I have this gift. And she explains that when her family makes it to the other side, she knows it. And
they
They let her know. I totally believe in this.
Oh, totally. So, yeah.
She explains that like when her grandmother passed away, she came and like said, like, I'm here, you know, like I'm safe. I made it. Her grandfather did the same thing. And she said,
and had this dream and Jermaine was there. And she's like, I just wanted to tell you, I found grandma and grandpa and I'm fine. And she gave me a hug and she turned to walk away. And I said, Jermaine. And she goes, what? I was like, where's your body? And she looked me dead in the eyes. She said, it's in Evero. She's like, I love you, but I have to go.
It's in Evero. And she's like, I love you, but I have to go.
Yeah.
And it's like, I completely believe that that's the case. I know that she's in Evero. I know that this piece of shit did it. And it ends again. Like, so I just gave you Guy's personal phone number.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Because we get on-screen text at the end. If you have any information pertaining to Jermaine's disappearance, contact. This is the Missoula Police Department now. 406-552-6284. And let's get that piece of shit because I will enlist the bears.
Oh my God, we did 48 hours. Where is Jermaine Charlow?
Yes.
That's it. I don't really have anything else to say today.
I know. Thank you, Catherine, for telling us about this episode and for all of your amazing work trying to get justice for the West Memphis Six. Thank you. You're the best.
I don't want to re-traumatize anybody, but stay out of the bike lanes unless you're a bike. And if you're in a bike lane on a bike, obey the goddamn traffic rules.
And get the bike off the sidewalks.
That is insane. That is unacceptable.
Like, what?
I think we did it.
What?
I know. All right, we love you, fam.
We love you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.